Would you stand now as we hear from the word of the Lord? We're again in Song of Songs or Song of Solomon, chapter 2, verses 8 through 17. Chapter 2, verses 8 through 17. Chapter 2, verse 8. The voice of my beloved, behold, he comes, leaping over the mountains, bounding over the hills. My beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag. Behold, there he stands behind our wall, gazing through the windows, looking through the lattice. My beloved speaks and says to me, arise, my love, my beautiful one, and come away with me. For behold, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone, the flowers appear on the earth, the time of singing has come, the voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land, the fig tree ripens its figs, and the vines are in blossom, and they give forth fragrance. Arise, my love, my beautiful one, and come away. O my dove, in the clefts of the rock, in the crannies of the cliff, let me see your face. Let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet and your face is lovely. Catch the foxes for us, the little foxes that spoil the vineyards, for our vineyards are in blossom. My beloved is mine and I am his. He grazes among the lilies until the day breeze and the shadows flee. Turn, my beloved, and be like a gazelle or a young stag on cleft mountains. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. You may be seated. Well, it's certainly true that men and women are different. Different in many ways. I once heard someone give advice to a newly married couple, and this is what he said. He said, the secret to a healthy marriage is simple. Get to know your spouse. Get to know your spouse. Get to know who you're married to, which means getting to know the opposite sex. Then he said, let me make it really simple for you even more than that. Men, they're a lot like dogs. Women are a lot like cats. So he turned and looked at the woman and he said, and how do you make a dog happy? The three things that you do to make a dog happy is one, you feed it. Two, you praise it. And three, you play with it. And then he said to the man, and women are a lot like cats. How do you make a cat happy? Said, nobody really knows. Every cat is different. Whatever works one time probably won't work the next time. I'm not a cat fan. But don't read too much into that. And while this makes us laugh, in the text before us, the female character in the Song of Songs says, we're actually not that mysterious. We're not that complex as some of you think. She speaks very clearly, the woman speaking, here in our text, she speaks very clearly about what attracts her to this man. So it's her voice, but she's sometimes recounting his voice. But it starts with her voice. Over the last few weeks, we've seen in this song, the Song of Songs, that it's both about the relationship of a man and a woman. It's a love story. And it's also about Christ and his church, or Yahweh and Israel, Christ and his people, his bride. In this book, we see that God is pro-marriage, he's pro-sex, but that this sacred union of a man and a wife becoming one flesh points us to a greater reality. Paul says that the man and the woman becoming one flesh, something that began at the beginning of creation, is a profound mystery, and that speaks to the union of Christ with his people. So we've always been thinking about this song in terms of two levels of meaning. One, the man and the wife, and two, Christ and his church, Christ and his bride. So in this series, we're tracing this love story between this man, who we call Solomon, the bridegroom, the son of David, who should make you think of Jesus Christ himself, and this woman, the bride, the Shulamite, who is the church, the people of God. To see, yes, what we can learn both about our relationships with one another and what we can learn about what Christ has done for us. Last week, we saw how the man and the woman praise one another and they desire one another. And in our text today, we see his invitation to her and how she welcomes his invitation. Their physical union, I don't think, actually occurs till later. And so this is the preparation for their physical union. And to prepare for their union, we can see three things that the man does for the woman here. So I'm going to be speaking a lot to men, but I'll be speaking to women some too, because she's responding to how he acts towards her and how he speaks towards her. We see that he pursues her, he invites her, and she knows that they belong to one another exclusively. He pursues her, he invites her, and then finally that they belong to each other exclusively. Those points will be on the screen as we go through it. So let's look at the first one here. The first thing we see in verses 8 through 9 is how the man pursues the woman in his actions and how she anticipates his arrival. So he pursues her and she anticipates his arrival. That's seen in verses 8 through 9. She begins by recounting how she hears his voice from afar. Before she sees him, she hears him. She says, "Listen, behold," look at verse 8 with me. "Listen, behold, the voice of my beloved, I hear him. Here he comes." And she relates how she sees him coming to her like a gazelle or a young stag over the mountains. She says, "Behold, he comes." Notice how she's anticipating his arrival. "Behold, he comes, leaping over the mountains, bounding over the hills. My beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag." In short, the man, the bridegroom, is not letting anything, not even mountains, get in his way in his pursuit of her. He's coming for her. He's motivated to get to her. He's driven by passion, by enthusiasm, so much so that he bounds over the mountains to get to her. This man is like Isaiah Pacheco. That's the example I could think of. He'll run over anything to get to her. Or even this morning, I was thinking about the song by Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell, right? "There ain't no mountain high enough, ain't no valley, whatever it is, low enough," right? "To keep me from getting to you." But watch Remember the Titans when they're singing. That's a great scene, right? I don't know if they got that song from this, but that's the same imagery that he's given. That nothing is going to get him away or keep him away from her. Then in the middle of verse 9, the woman says, "He's arrived." So she hears his voice, and then she sees him coming, and then she says, "Behold, he's arrived." He stands there behind our wall. Where is she? It's hard to know in poetry exactly what's going on. It's not giving us like a strict narrative. I think this is her mother's house. And so she's in her mother's house, and he stands behind their wall, and he gazes through the windows, looking through the lattice. He's gone from distance to nearness. He's arrived at her home. In the imagery, it might make you think he's like a stalker, but that's not what's going on here, honestly, when you read this, right? He's not like a peeping Tom. This is the opposite. He doesn't barge in rudely demanding her. No, he waits outside, and what we're going to see in the next point is he invites her. He invites her to come away with him. He approaches her with honor and respect. He comes close so that she knows of his interest, but not too close. He waits outside the wall, and he's going to call to her from outside of the wall. Their time of union is still not yet, so he will invite her to himself. So what we see just in these first two verses is that the fruit of true love is pursuit and anticipation. Pursuit and anticipation. Love doesn't stand still. It moves. It goes through the mountains to get to her. He traverses whatever obstacle there is so that he might be with her. He runs to her. She anticipates his coming with great longing. These are the rhythms of love that we see really throughout this entire song. It's worthwhile to pause and ask whether your love still includes pursuit and anticipation. Does your love still include pursuit and anticipation? Certainly, it seems like this is easier to do if you're in a relationship during the dating and honeymoon phase. But what about after 5 years? What about after 10 years? What about after 20 years? What about after 50 years? Is there still pursuit and anticipation of one another, even though you've been together for so long? It's so easy in our relationships to grow indifferent, apathetic, and disinterested, and even cold to one another. To neglect each other, and the distance begins to grow slowly, slowly, and you start to drift apart. But here in our text, the man pursues and the woman anticipates. So married men, I think the question is simple for us. Are you still pursuing your wife? Are you still pursuing your wife? Do you plan date nights? Do you plan date nights? Do you greet her with love in the morning and when you arrive home? Did your pursuit end at the altar, or do you continually chase her like you did when you all were dating? And wives, do you anticipate the arrival of your husband? She longs for him to come to her. Listen, here he comes. Do you admire? Do you praise him? Do you yearn for him? On the date night, do you show your anticipation by getting dressed up a little bit? That's not a law, but it can signal, I'm excited about this. Let's do something a little different. That applies to men too. Take off the sweatpants. Put on some nice pants, right? You should anticipate this. I mean, you think about it. It's strange. Like you're together all the time and you're like, let's go out and let's get dressed up. It seems like, well, we could just do whatever we want to. But I think some of these things just show your anticipation that I value this time with you. I'm excited about this. I want to make this special. Wives, do you anticipate times with your husband more than you do times with your friends? Do you love spending time with him? Do you anticipate times with him more than times with your family? Or has your love grown cold towards one another? It's a silly example, but when Hannah comes home, our dog Nala, who I love so much, as if you know me, is so full of joy and anticipation. She doesn't really care about me, but she loves Hannah. She puts her paws up on the door and just is like, oh, she's here, she's here. And then Hannah walks in and we haven't trained her very well. So she's like all over her. She's jumping up to her, so excited. I even got her out of the cage this morning and I picked her up and she was like just trying to run out of my arms to get to Hannah. And I could feel her heart just like beating so fast. She like loves to greet Hannah. She doesn't care about me, but she loves to greet Hannah. Is that the sort of anticipation that you have to see one another? Now, obviously, well, I'm not saying you have to manufacture that and every day is going to look like, oh, celebration, you're here. But is there anything of that? Is any of that left in your own relationship? And for those of you who are not married, I just want you to pay attention to this as well. Did you notice that the man pursues the woman? He comes to her. He takes the risk. He stands outside the door and calls to her. And it's possible that she might shut that window and say, nope. But he stands outside. He takes this first step in pursuit. So guys, let's get real. Ask the girl out. Ask the girl out. Don't wait for her to show you she is interested. Just ask her. Take the initiative. Take the risk. If you can't risk the rejection, why would she believe you would risk something else for her? Take the risk. He stands at the door and he waits for her to accept his invitation. He's waiting for her consent. Love never takes, never forces, never barges in, but it does pursue. It does pursue. And ladies, she takes great delight in his pursuit. So don't discourage him. It's not wrong to give him clear hints of what you're wanting. Pay attention to him. Smile at him. Talk to him. If he tells a joke, laugh and touch his arm. He'll notice. He will notice that, okay? That's just giving him hints like, I'm interested. That's okay. And ladies, I'm getting more specific, but if he asks you to coffee, it's not a marriage proposal. It's just a vanilla latte. You can say yes or no. You're free to say yes or no, but it won't hurt you to get a free drink and to get to know him a little bit, right? So you don't have to make this like, oh, what should I do? I don't know. Just go have coffee with him. It's not a big deal, right? And just make, and then if you decide that's not for you, okay, that's fine. What we see here is love pursues and love anticipates. So men pursue, women anticipate that pursuit. We've considered this in the first two verses. Then if you look at verses 10 through 15, we can see how love, second, love invites. Love invites. We've already spoken about this some. In these verses, we hear what the man says to the woman as she stands outside, as he stands outside her house. And note that if in the first verses he gives evidence of his love in his actions, he's coming for her, right? Now he's giving evidence of his love how? In his words and how he speaks. So first he's bounding over the mountains to get to her, and next he begins speaking to her. It's like Romeo and Juliet, I guess, them like talking to each other, right? But he's the one actually speaking to her. So in verses 10 through 13, he invites her to come away with him because the time is right. Look at verses 10 through 13. This is what he says. She's recounting what he says. He says, "Arise, my love, my beautiful one, and come away. For behold, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone, the flowers appear on the earth, the time of singing has come, and the voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land. The fig tree ripens its figs, and the vines are in blossom. They give forth fragrance." The man says, winter is gone, springtime is here, the ground which was once frozen is now alive. Essentially, he's saying, love is in the air. Let's go. I'm calling to you. I want you to come. Out with me. Everything's blooming. Our love is blooming. He calls her his beautiful one. He invites her to leave her mother's house and to come with him. Now, he might be inviting her to physical union, but I actually think this is all in preparation for that. More likely, he's simply saying, come, take a walk with me. Let's go into the mountains and walk. And talk and be with one another. This is the original Walk to Remember, right? I don't know. I don't even remember that movie, but there is a movie called A Walk to Remember. Is it any good? Who knows? I don't know. So keep reading verses 13 and partway through verse 13. He says, "Arise, my love, my beautiful one." Notice he says that again. That's the second time he said this. "And come away. Oh, my dove, in the clefts of the rock, in the crannies of the cliff, let me see your face. Let me see your face. Let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet and your face is lovely. Catch the foxes for us, the little foxes that spoil the vineyards, for our vineyards are in blossom." He invites her by speaking words of affirmation and love over her. He calls her, notice, his love, his beautiful one, his dove. He says, I long to see your face. I long to hear your voice. And he even asks her to catch the foxes that ruin their vineyards. Their vineyards or their gardens are a symbol throughout this book of their love. But who are the foxes? If you look through commentators, no one really knows who the foxes are. But the point is really clear. The point is that these foxes are those things that might threaten their love. Foxes were notorious for damaging vineyards, for getting in there, and they're particularly fond of grapes, and grapes are a sign of their love all throughout this song. So the foxes are going to come and steal and threaten and eat away at the vineyard of their love. And he's saying, get rid of those. Get rid of the foxes so that our love can grow and blossom. So in this middle section, we can see how the man doesn't force his way into her house. He invites, he beckons, he calls to her, and he speaks words of love over her. He says, come, take a walk with me. The springtime of our love has come. And as we turn and we think about how we can apply this to our own relationships, I just want to point out three realities from this text that I think we can learn from in terms of our own relationships. First, we can see that the man doesn't merely feel affection, he declares it. He declares his affection for her. He speaks words of love and admiration over her. He calls her his love, his beautiful one, his dove. He longs to see her face and hear her voice. So husbands, is this how you speak of your wife? Is this how you speak to your wife? Do you use your words to tell her how beautiful she is? When was the last time you told her, you are beautiful? I love you. There's nothing else that I want besides you. When was the last time you used your words to encourage your wife in this way? Because this is how this man speaks to her. When was the last time that you wrote a love note to your spouse? And words of affirmation are something, this text is a challenge for me because I can struggle with that. I can be quick to critique, to point out something that needs to be fixed, but the man gives us an example of love, just declaring, I love you. You are beautiful to me. So husbands, here's the challenge for us. Make it a regular practice just to speak words of affirmation and love over your wife. Your love and your relationship will blossom so much more if you do that. Make it a consistent habit of yours. Second, he calls her to catch the foxes that threaten their love. I know that for Hannah and I, we often need to create space where we can speak openly about the things that threaten our relationship with one another. We have to create space where we openly speak about the things that threaten our relationship with one another. Just the other night, Hannah talked to me about the things she felt like that were threats to our relationship. She needed to speak to them, and I need to make space for listening and not immediately reply with excuses or go on the defensive. There are and there will be dangers to your love. If this is a picture of the gospel, where do you think the dark spiritual forces are going to attack? They're going to attack your relationship. So there will be struggles in your marriage. That's a fact. None of our relationships are like a Hollywood movie where everything's just like, oh, this is so great. No. There will be struggles in your relationship, and you have to take time to go fox hunting. You need to identify what those foxes are, and you need to deal with them. Because if not, they will destroy the vineyard. As one commentator pointed out, foxes are not large creatures. Small, they're sly, they're sneaky, and they're quick. And they usually come out at night when no one sees them, and often you only recognize their presence after the damage has been done. And how often is that the case in our own relationships, In the same way, trouble in marriage is often in the small things. Often in the small things. Many times the foxes that threaten our relationship come down to communication, responsibilities, how we deal with in-laws, how we deal with parenting, how we deal with conflict resolution. And you need to talk about those things. What seems like a small division can blow up into something much, much bigger. So don't ignore that which threatens your relationship. You need to take time to talk about those things. And sometimes that means just going to counseling together, because that's the place where you make space just to listen to one another. Or you can do that just you two, but often married couples don't make the space to do that. Why? Sometimes it's not even because you don't want to, because you're busy. Especially if you have young kids. It's like, we just don't have time. But husbands, this is where you need to lead. You need to make sure there is time to talk about these things. Turn off Netflix. You don't need to watch that extra show. Ask, how are we doing? How are we doing? Tell me honestly. So here's what I want to encourage you to do this week, or maybe even today if you have time. Find a time, if you're married, to be with one another and simply ask each other, what season do you feel like our relationship is in? You don't have to ask it in this way, but ask something like this. And ask, what are the threats to our relationship? Try to listen sympathetically and not get upset or defensive. Because if one of you gets upset or defensive, it usually derails that conversation. Just listen. So here's some examples. Is it the winter in your relationship? Are things frozen? And is there little life? You should be honest about that if that's where you're feeling like things are. Because if it's frozen and it's winter, that means the foxes have come in and you've got to get rid of them. Or maybe you're in fall harvest. You're living off past realities, but things are fading. In other words, you feel like we were doing well, but it feels like recently we're kind of on a downward slope. Right? All relationships get to that place where you're like, I feel like we're not connecting very well right now. It's not terrible, but we're not connecting well. We're kind of in fall time. Or maybe you're in summer drought where things are just busy, but underneath there's really a lack of nourishment. So it's like, we're not mad at each other, but we just haven't connected. We just are kind of like two ships passing in the night. You're kind of in the summer drought. Like things are just happening, but you're not actually connecting with one another. Or maybe you're in springtime. Love is fertile and it's growing. You're communicating well. The soil is fertile. Things are blooming. Protect that. Protect that. Keep it going. Don't let the foxes come and ruin what God has. So third point of application here, just under love invites. I have more here in terms of application. Finally, there's certainly a word for husbands and future husbands here about preparation and invitation to physical union. As I mentioned before, I think the best interpretation of the Song of Songs and of this passage is the man is inviting the woman to come walk with him, to go to the clefts of the rock, and they actually don't come together in their physical union until the middle of this book. And so if I can speak in general terms here, men often find physical intimacy enjoyable even when the relationship itself isn't where it should be. But for most women, they experience intimacy differently. For them, it is deeply relational. They open themselves physically when they feel secure emotionally and spiritually. So notice what the man does here. He first speaks tenderly to her. He invites her to walk with him. He prepares her heart for union. Often, husbands, what you say to your wife in the morning will go a long way to determine what happens in the bedroom later. And men don't often think in that way, and we need to think in that way. Husbands and future husbands, hear this. The sexual act is never merely physical. It's meant to be an overflow of the true oneness, emotional and spiritual. A union of minds and hearts and bodies. And men tend to think sometimes it's just a union of bodies. But it's more than that. And it actually becomes more than that when you have true intimacy, true union in terms of emotional and spiritual. So men, husbands, future husbands, prepare your wives. Speak words of affirmation over her. Prepare each other for the physical union that is to come. That is something good and beautiful in the way that God has created us to come together. Third point and final point here in terms of the song and our passage. We've considered how love pursues. It's not apathetic, but it's active. How love invites, verses 10 through 17, it does not force its way in, but it beckons her. And now in verses 16 through 17, we see how love belongs. Love belongs. The woman speaks in joy. I think what she's saying is she's going to come out to him, right? She's responding to his invitation now. In verses 16 through 17, this is what she says. She says, "My beloved is mine, and I am his. He grazes among the lilies until the day breeze and the shadows flee. Turn, my beloved, and be like a gazelle or a young stag on cleft mountains." This text has moved from distance to nearness, from waiting to invitation, and now from striving to belonging. He is mine, and I am his. She is responding to his invitation. The woman now claims the man as her own, and she is his. The language here is one of delight, confidence, and assurance. They mutually find security and love and comfort in each other. Their love is exclusive for one another. He is mine, and I am his. We are no one else's. She welcomes him to graze or feed among the lilies. He has invited her, and now she invites him to enjoy her. She gladly offers herself to him. This text actually began, did you notice this? It began with describing him like a gazelle that leaps over the mountains to come to her. And now, because of his pursuit and invitation, she says, "Be like a gazelle upon me." She welcomes him to herself. And this last line is clear. She wants him to be a young stag on cleft mountains. These cleft mountains, these two hills with a valley between them, are a not so subtle reference to her breast. She says, "You have pursued me, and now I am willing to open myself to you. You have leapt over those mountains. Now come to my mountains," essentially is what she's saying. That's just exegesis of the Song of Songs. I'm sorry to put it so plainly, but that's what she's saying. She's saying, "Come to me and eat of the delights that I offer you." And here we have a word to wives. Wives, take notice of how she gives herself to him. She says, "Yes, you have pursued me. Yes, you have invited me. And now I belong to you. I am yours. I am yours." She welcomes him to enjoy her. And so, wives, are you giving yourself to your husband in this way? Are you giving yourself to your husbands in this way? Husbands, yes, are called to pursue and invite, but you are called to freely give yourself to him and he to you. That's what they're anticipating. They're anticipating coming together in physical union. And it's certainly tempting to think, well, let me speak for the wives here. Well, I certainly would do that if he would just pursue me better. I certainly would do that if he would just invite me better, if he would speak words of affirmation over me. In one of our one and only pre-marriage counseling session before Hannah and I were married, our pastor reminded us of one very important reality. This is what he said. He said, "Ephesians tells wives to submit to their husbands, not if he loves you, but to submit to him as to the Lord." And he tells husbands to love their wives, not if or when she submits to you, but to love her as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. In other words, Husbands and wives, love and submit, not because the other person on the other side is doing so well. Because if you wait till the other person does it perfectly, you're never going to do it. The scriptures say we do this not first and foremost, even responding to one another, but we are responding to what Christ has done for us. Husbands, love your wives because Christ has loved us. And wives, submit and open yourselves to your husbands because this is what the church is called to do to Christ, who has loved the church. And that this is where we ought to consider how this text ultimately refers to Christ and the church. I hope as I went through this, you couldn't help but think of the true Adam, the true bridegroom, the son of David, Jesus Christ himself. So just go back to the beginning and look over this text again. Let your eyes go back over the beginning and look over them with Christ in view. Husbands and men, yes, you're called to pursue, not just because it's cultural. Not just because it's cultural, because it was Christ who out of love pursued us. Who out of love pursued us, his bride, the church, just as she heard the man's voice from afar. She says, listen, behold, I can hear the voice of my beloved. Jesus says, my sheep hear my voice and they listen. He has called to you. He has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. He has pursued you. You have heard his voice from afar. And Jesus is the one who ultimately is like the gazelle who comes leaping over the mountains. No mountain can stop him from coming to us. And how did he do that? He took on flesh. The second person of the Trinity said, I'm not going to let anything get in my way of saving you, of coming to you, of standing outside of your door so that you can hear my voice call over you. He took on flesh on your behalf. This is what Isaiah says. Isaiah says, go up on a high mountain, lift up your voice with strength, say to the cities of Judah, behold your God, here he comes. He's coming to rescue you. Isn't that the same imagery here? The same imagery, she hears his voice from afar, and then he comes to her. Our God has come to us in the person of Jesus Christ, and Jesus Christ stands at the door. What does he do? He knocks. He knocks, and he says, open the door to me. Let me come into you and you to me. He says these words, the voice of the bridegroom over you. Arise, my love. Arise, my love, my beautiful one. You are his love, his beautiful one. And he speaks these words over you and he says, come to me. It makes me think of in Ephesians 5, how he says, awake, O sleeper, and arise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. You are beautiful to him. If you are in Christ, you are beautiful to him. You are precious in his sight. Like Lazarus, he speaks to us and he says, come out of that grave. Come out. Come out and join me. Come out and have union with me. And not only does he pursue and invite you, but he claims you as his. You belong to him. The text says, my beloved is mine and I am his. You are Christ's. And Christ is yours. If you are in Christ, you now belong to him and he now belongs to you. You are his treasured possession. You are his chosen one. He has called you by name because you are his. You are Christ. Isn't this what it says throughout the whole Old Testament? I will be their God and they will be my people. They are mine and I am theirs. My beloved is mine and I am his. That's the same theme that we see throughout the whole Old Testament. So if he has pursued you, if Christ has invited you, if he has chosen you, what should your response be to him? Give yourself to him. Give yourself to him. Open yourself up to him. He's calling you. He's inviting you. If you're not a Christian, do you hear his voice? Do you hear his voice even now as he speaks to you? He's saying, come to me. You are mine. You are my beloved. Give yourself to me, and we will go into the springtime of love. You will have delights that you will have nowhere else. We so often give ourselves to loves that will not love us back. And we spend all of our time trying to love these other things. This is the one true love that will love you back more than the love that you can give to him. You will find fullness of joy and satisfaction only in union with him. And that's why this book is his love song to you. It's his love song to you saying, I love you, I want you, you are beautiful to me, my love, I want to hear your voice, I want to see your face. Come to me. Allow me to speak words of love over you. We always talk about we need to read this Bible more. Yes, we do. But if you view it as a love song, don't you want to read it more? It's not just a task anymore. Because these words become streams of living water over us as he showers his love upon us. This is the gospel message, that Christ has pursued you and invited you, and you now belong to him, and he belongs to you. And there's no greater love story in the whole universe. There's no greater love song than this one. Our marriages, our relationships are just a picture. It's just a tiny window into what God has done for us in Jesus Christ. And so as we read these words, be overwhelmed with the love of Christ for you and open yourself up to him, because he has invited you, he has pursued you, and you now belong to him. Let's pray.